This is Law Bites, a podcast with Michael Geist.
This is the CBC Television Network.
CBC's been around for almost 90 years.
This is CBC.
Its role to inform, enlighten, and entertain Canadians. But as the U.S. threatens Canada's sovereignty, the government says it's time for more responsibility and more funding.
We need to envision the investments that we're making in our public broadcaster as a national security issue.
Canada pays $33 per person a year for its public broadcaster. The Heritage Minister wants that number closer to the G7 average, $62. Plus, to drop subscription fees, make all news ad-free, and for CBC Radio Canada to take on a new role fighting disinformation at a time when social media companies have a powerful reach.
Debates over the role and future of the CBC are seemingly about as old as the CBC itself. Those debates have become increasingly fractious in recent years, as some see the public broadcaster as essential to Canadian culture and to address concerns around misinformation, while others insist that it's hopelessly biased, outdated, and a threat to marketplace competition. Tara Henley is a Canadian writer, journalist, and podcaster who spent years at the CBC. Several years ago, she quit it in very public fashion and has since developed an important presence online through her podcasts and Substack. She recently wrote a critical piece on how to save the CBC, and she agreed to join me on the podcast to discuss. Tara, welcome to the podcast.
Great to be with you.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining. You know, as you know, and I think certainly many listeners know, CBC has long been a lightning rod for some pretty strong views there. There are those that certainly see it as essential to Canadian culture and to address sort of growing concerns around misinformation. There's others that view it as biased, outdated, duplicative. I mean, I think there's a long list of concerns that have been raised. And it certainly appears that it's going to be a pretty major political issue in a federal election that we think is going to come sometime in the next couple of months, or certainly this year, with some pretty clear lines that are drawn between the parties. You've got experience at the CBC. You've been vocal about some of the things we can do about it. I'd like to get into some of your thoughts, as well as some of your reaction to Heritage Minister St. Onge's recently announced plan for the CBC. But first, can you describe a little bit your journalist background, your work on the CBC, and what you currently are doing?
Sure. Yeah. So I have been a journalist for 23 years. And in terms of the CBC, I started in 2013 on George Strombolopoulos Tonight as an interview producer. And then I went to Current Affairs Radio, and I worked a number of different roles and different shows in Current Affairs Radio in two different newsrooms, Toronto and Vancouver. So I did two stints in both. And I did things like, you know, morning producer, night producer, chase producer, director, show producer, audience producer, a lot of different roles. But then I also participated in other kind of areas of the broadcaster. I was in the Doc Projects training program. So I made some audio documentaries for national shows. I was a mentor to young journalists. And also I was an occasional on-air books columnist for the BC region, and then for Metro Morning and Ontario Morning. So I guess just all of that is to say that I worked in a lot of different capacities, different shows, different newsrooms, which I think gave me a good perspective on what was going on at the CBC, and a very, I should say, very rank and file perspective on what was going on. I did leave the CBC quite publicly. I wrote a resignation letter, which surprised me to and went viral. And since then, I have been a sort of receptacle of public complaints about the CBC, as you can imagine. So I have heard probably from thousands of Canadians at this point, in every sort of format you can think of: text message, email, direct message, on the street, in the dog park. So it's, I really have heard from a lot of Canadians, and I think it puts me in a unique perspective to sort of address what's going on with the CBC. And just to wrap that up, I am a critic of the CBC, but I'm also a defender of the CBC. I very much believe in public national broadcasters. I really believe in the role that they play in our society. And I want to see the CBC preserved for the next generation. So all of that is to say, that's my perspective. The work that I do currently is, I am independent. I have two podcasts. The first one is Lean Out. That is an interview current affairs podcast. And the second one is a media criticism podcast at The Hub. That one is called Full Press. And I also do opinion essays on Substack. So that's sort of what I do now.
Yeah, no, you've been so productive and so many interesting things right now. And it was really, I'm an avid reader of the Substack. And it was one of those pieces that actually highlighted exactly what you just suggested, that you've been critical of the CBC. It's interesting to learn that so many people now identify you as someone to reach out to, but someone who wants to find a way to make it succeed and find its place. And I thought that a detailed piece that you wrote looked at that in that kind of more positive light about how can we go about addressing some of the issues. Now, in that piece, and I'll link to it in the show notes, you identified four major areas of concern that are often raised when it comes to the CBC. And you suggested that they by and large all revolve around the issue of trust. Can you explain a little bit what you meant?
Yeah, I started thinking a lot about public trust last year because I wrote the Massey essay on the state of the media, which is a partnership between Massey College at the University of Toronto and the Literary Review of Canada. And my editor, Kyle Wyatt, and I decided that we would focus on public trust in particular because we wanted to try to unpack. It's a complicated issue and there's a lot of factors that go into it. But in thinking through that essay and researching that essay, doing a lot of reporting for that essay, I started to think about how that might apply to the CBC. And as I see it, they have a lot of issues to grapple with, funding for sure, the political climate. There's a lot of different issues that they're grappling with. But fundamentally, the big issue that they have to overcome if they want to survive is public trust. And this is really reflected back to me in the comments that I hear from the public. So there's four chief criticisms that I hear about the CBC and that I think the CBC needs to really focus on and grapple with. You know, there's recent polling from McGill from the Center for Technology there that says 78% of Canadians would like to see the CBC continue. But the caveat is if it addresses its chief criticisms. And so I'm trying to get at what are the chief criticisms? What would it look like to have meaningful progress in addressing those criticisms? What would real change actually look like? So those criticisms include bias, which we can go into in further detail later if you like. That's a very thorny issue to think and talk about, but it is what I hear the most from the public. Mistakes. There is a real feeling from the public that the CBC has made mistakes on key stories in this country, that they have not revisited them when more information has become available, and that has eroded public trust. And this is particularly true of the pandemic era. And you can really see this reflected in the CBC's own documents. Its ombudsman report for 2021-2022 showed a 60% increase in complaints, and that the comments from the ombudsman were very revealing, that these complaints that he was getting, he said, were just very jarring. There was a very passionate issue for Canadians, something that we need to resolve. The third major criticism is coming from within the media. So the media is in a very difficult position right now, as you know, as you've reported on yourself. And there's a real feeling from independent startups that the CBC is using its $1.4 billion advantage to compete against struggling startups, and that this is stifling innovation in this country, which we really need in our media sector. And then the fourth one is fairly straightforward. It has to do with spending and how the CBC spends the money that it gets. And the outrage over bonuses has been quite considerable. And we just saw again this last year, $18.4 million going to CBC staff. And I think it was something like 45 executives took the most of that. So it's a problem to the public for sure. But then there's also the issue of its executive vice presidents are making almost $500,000 a year, that this doesn't in the public's mind seem to fit with a public national broadcaster. So this is a big thorny issue that they also really need to address. And I don't think they've done a great job of addressing it to date. We just saw Marie-Philippe Bouchard go on The Current. Matt Galloway, to his credit, pushed on that issue. And there wasn't a satisfying answer about the bonuses.
Yeah, no, it continues to pop up again and again for understandable reasons, especially when you start talking about the numbers that are involved. You know, I want to get to some of the solutions that you identified, and many of them try to touch on addressing those issues. But first, between the time when you wrote that piece and as we record this, the Heritage Minister for now, she's announced she's not running again, Pascal Saint-Onge, came up with her plan, identifying where the current government would go with respect to the CBC. It talks about more stable funding, so more money into the CBC, less advertising, which perhaps seeks to address some of those competition-related concerns that you mentioned, and some governance reforms that perhaps in theory might address some of the other kinds of trust issues. What did you make of that plan and the extent to which it might address some of the kinds of things that you keep hearing about with respect to the CBC?
On the one hand, I found it interesting that she did phrase things in terms of a more positive vision for the CBC going forward. It was good to hear that. I think so much of the conversation about the CBC has been so negative and so polarized, and that the CBC's defense of itself has really been to point fingers to problems in the media environment, as opposed to taking responsibility for its own role in this. And so to hear the minister come out and articulate a positive vision for what the CBC might look like, I think that was useful and helpful. I liked hearing that there would be more participation from the public, although I have no idea what that would look like in practice. But the key idea that this is, you know, a democratic institution is, I think, important to emphasize. And I do think that the move on advertising is a good one. But overall, Michael, I just found it very disappointing. There does seem to be a lack of urgency, a lack of understanding the kind of existential moment that the CBC is in right now. There just isn't, I'm not hearing from the CBC itself or from the government any real radical solutions. And at this point, I think it's going to take radical, bold action to save the CBC from the chopping block. So it was, I just found it disappointing. What did you think?
Yeah, no, I'm inclined to agree. It felt like what sometimes gets churned out of government, which, you know, after it's gone through lots of consultations and lots of attempts to kind of smooth out the edges, you end up with stuff that isn't particularly visionary. And as you say, is designed to kind of keep on keeping on while trying to smooth out some of the kinds of concerns that might exist. And I think you're right that in the current environment, it's probably going to take more than that. I mean, we clearly have at least one political party that's talked about defunding on the English language side. And, you know, even if it doesn't go that far, it is fairly apparent that CBC has been hit with increasing amount of trust-related concerns for a lot of people. And certainly during a lot of the debate around C18, you would hear increasingly from independent media who were, you know, angry in almost equal measure with the government on the one hand and the CBC on the other. And they would say, why is the CBC getting this chunk of Google money? And early iterations of that bill, CBC stood to be one of the largest recipients, and the government didn't seem bothered by that at all. And even if they weren't big recipients, they would say, listen, in many of our markets, the CBC is our biggest competitor, and it's government funded. And now there's a proposal that provides it with even more money, this time coming from private sector entities like Google. So You've got competitors raising concerns. You've got the public raising concerns. It doesn't feel like the government, as you suggest, senses that urgency. It sort of says, well, we can engage in some governance related issues. We'll give even more money to the CBC. And so that may address some of the concerns that come up from competition, but it certainly isn't bold in any meaningful way.
No, and the idea of increasing the funding for the CBC right now is just pure fantasy. That is just never going to happen in the climate that we're in. And I don't think, nor should it. I do support a robust, fully funded CBC, but the idea of in effect, doubling its resources right now when it is in crisis and without direction just doesn't seem prudent to me at all.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. So let's talk about some of the things that you do identify as potential actions. And we could stick for a moment on the issue of the CBC as a competitor to some of the existing players. You identified 15 reforms. It's pretty tough to get to all of them. But that issue of CBC competing for ad dollars, competing in certain markets, has been this ongoing issue that in some ways brings together criticisms from the public as well as criticisms from the market and the competitors themselves. You suggest that they need to get out of markets where the private sector adequately serves those markets. Maybe can expand a bit on that. And I get address the question because it's come up when people push back against that to say, you know, if you take it out of all of those places, you know, is it still a relevant CBC? Are you basically saying it's only in the places that have so little relevance that the private sector simply doesn't want to serve them?
It's a tricky question. I do think that the CBC is stretched too thin. It's trying to do too many things and be too many things to too many people. And that at this point, we have to look at what is difficult to do in this country in terms of the private market. And of course, my lens, I'm a journalist. I'm most focused on journalism and how we save journalism in this country, because I think it plays a really important role in our civic life. So local news is very difficult to do in this climate, and as is investigative reporting and really reporting in general, and certainly foreign reporting. These are things that it's really difficult to find a good business case to do, and I think the CBC should naturally gravitate towards and use its institutional weight and its resources to do those things that the private sector either can't do or isn't interested in doing well. In terms of the relevance question, I think that's such an interesting question that you raise. I think we have to think about how we're defining relevance in this country and in this environment. Do we think about it through a commercial competitor lens, or do we think about it more in terms of, you know, a concept that my colleague Jen Gerson at The Line has proposed, which is more like a journalism library concept? The CBC could move into being a sort of supporter of journalism in this country in a way that it has done in the past. In some instances, it does train a lot of our journalists, but it could move further into that area. It could start using its equipment and studio space to support these really struggling startups that have a really difficult time scaling, that have a difficult time accessing equipment. It could begin to make its reporting available for free of charge to other outlets. It could do more of the work of training journalists, bring back some beloved CBC figures to conduct workshops for young podcasters, you know, on best practices. All of this, the CBC could move into that space. I would argue that would make it way more relevant than it is right now, but it depends on how you define relevancy.
Yeah, no, that's certainly a fair point. And at a minimum, the idea of using CBC-based materials to enhance the viability of especially some of the startups, thinking about open licensing has been a hobby horse of mine for a very long time, thinking about Creative Commons licensing as a potential avenue for the CBC to see its work used. You do talk quite a bit about training and hiring practices, and you just did now as a role that the CBC could play. You know, how could some of those things be improved, and how do you think that addresses some of the trust related issues, or does it just make the CBC more relevant and have a stronger case for ongoing public support?
Well, one of the things I have talked a lot about with training is the degree requirement for journalists. I think we need to abolish it. When I started out as a journalist, my mentors, one of them does not have a high school degree, and another one never went to university or college. This was really the norm. If you go back several decades in journalism, it was not considered a profession. It was considered more of a trade. And really, anything you need to learn about journalism, you can learn and should learn on the job in the doing of it. You don't need to go to journalism school. I didn't. And I don't even think you need to go to higher education. If we were to remove the degree requirement, it would accomplish a couple of things. For one, it would combat that idea that we in the media are the elites. It would take the profession back to its more working class roots, which are more connected to the public, but it would also increase our talent pool. And right now, the pool of people who can afford to go to university, first of all, but then also now is increasingly common to advanced degrees and then do unpaid or poorly paid internships. What you're dealing with is a very small pool of people. And typically it falls into the same sort of categories: financially well-off, urban, secular. the CBC does have a perspective problem. They have acknowledged this. I was sitting at an event called Trust Talks where Brody Fenland said this, that we need to kind of break out of our bubble, essentially. And one easy way to do that would be to remove the barriers to work at CBC, to have true diversity, geographic diversity, political diversity, economic diversity, and widen our talent pool so that we're making that job available to more people. That's one thing you could do. Another thing that you could do is to remove the political litmus tests. This is a controversial thing to say, so let me elaborate a little bit. When you seek employment at CBC, for example, in Current Affairs Radio, which I did, the process is you have to sit for what's called a board. And that is, you are interviewed by several news leaders. And what matters in that board is not your resume. It's not how long you have worked on that show. It is the questions that are laid out and the numerical score that you get for each of those questions. Those questions can be quite political. It's a very specific understanding of diversity, equity, and inclusion, and a specific articulation of that. If you stray, if you say, talk about diversity of thought instead, you're not going to score as high numerically, and you're not going to, what it's called, win that board. You're not going to get that job or that contract. And so my feeling is that we should really take a look at that process and try to make it more politically neutral. Both of those things, I think, would really go a long way to addressing the CBC's trust issues.
Okay, interesting. Now, you do focus quite a lot on bias, and you mentioned it off the top in terms of some of the coverage that they've had, the controversial issues, at times having a bit more of a monolith when it comes to certain perspectives. I guess you've started to answer that question about how has the CBC failed in this regard, and you're certainly hearing from many suggesting that it has. I assume hiring practices would be one example of where the CBC could do better. Do you have other thoughts about how else the CBC might seek to address some of those kinds of concerns?
Sometimes that the bias is a lack of awareness of other perspectives. And I think the CBC could go a long way by doing something very simple, like just organizing lunch and learns for CBC employees on these really controversial topics. I get the sense, sometimes reading coverage of things like the transgender issues, that the reporter either is completely unaware of the other perspectives that are out there or cannot find a way to articulate those perspectives in a way that is not totally third rail. A way to combat that would be to have lunch and learns, to bring in outside speakers. There's a lot of incredibly reasonable and interesting people who talk about these things in the public square. Anyone online can find them in 5 minutes. But just to give the staff of the CBC more exposure to these different perspectives, I think would help a lot. Bias is a very tricky thing to talk about. I think it's there's not a particularly satisfying way of measuring it. You can do what I have done, which is say I've heard from so many people. That is anecdotal evidence. You can look at, you know, what's happening online. You can say, well, the feedback we're getting from the public online is a little bit skewed. You can go story by story, but that can read as cherry picking. One way to tackle this problem that I have found really interesting is what Dave Snow has done recently in The Hub, which is to actually do empirical analysis, to take a subject like, for example, parental consent on pronoun changes at schools in Saskatchewan and look at all of the coverage and do an analysis of that coverage. How many stories included rebuttals? How many stories included activists? And really take a granular look at the coverage. That to me is sort of the way forward. And I would actually like to see the CBC do that work on itself. I would like it to take the big issues that I hear from about from the public all the time, the trucker convoy, like the big hot button issues, the pandemic, the lab leak theory, things that get brought up all the time, transgender issues, safe supply, and take a granular look at its own coverage and then release the results of that.
Okay. I mean, some really interesting ideas. I want to exit news for just a moment and touch a bit on the entertainment side. As both you and I guess the minister and Minister St. Ange both had recommendations for the streaming entertainment business that the CBC has established with Jim. You argue they should get out of the business. The minister says it should get out of the subscription business when it comes to that, and that it should no longer charge. You know, I recall during the debate on C-11, the streaming bill legislation, that one of the arguments that some made was that, you know, that the CBC was effectively the alternative to the large U.S. streaming services, to the Netflix and Disneys of the world. So you didn't need to be as focused on CanCon on Netflix or Disney because, you know, the CBC was essentially offering that alternative. Although, of course, some of the CBC's most successful stuff actually ultimately makes its way onto Netflix and becomes far more successful once it's on that platform. But regardless, there was this idea that that CBC was providing an important streaming alternative. And so some would say, listen, you don't have to get into the regulation of the streaming business. If we exit this, does that suggest that we need to sort of double down or really engage on some of the kind of CanCon regulation, assuming that's an important policy priority? If the CBC is not there for that, and you've got these streaming services that might not be there but for regulation, does that suggest if we get the CBC out of this, we need to start thinking even become more focused when it comes to regulating some of those foreign services?
It's a really difficult question, and one I don't have a complete answer for at this point. I think with the streaming services, I came to that conclusion somewhat reluctantly. I do think that the telling of Canadian stories is very important. But again, my focus is on journalism and how do we save journalism in this country. And I guess with the streaming services, there's a couple of points. One, should Canadians be paying for something that they paid to produce in the first place? That's one question. Another question is, if you produce these Canadian content shows, it doesn't guarantee that anyone's going to watch or listen to them. That's another piece. But as far as the regulation is concerned, I'm also concerned about government bureaucrats deciding what is Canadian content and what is not. So there's no perfect solution to this. But the Canadian and entertainment content on the CBC has not, with some exceptions, has not been very popular. It has failed to really establish audiences, even niche audiences in some cases. And so if you were to be really brutal about the CBC right now, which I think you have to be in order to save it, I think you would have to scrap that. But I say that with reservations, for sure.
Yeah. Fair enough. And I think that certainly the CanCon issues, to be sure, are not going to be solved with the CBC alone. Now, you mentioned off the top, and you mentioned throughout, this notion of a positive vision for the CBC, and clearly that's what you're hoping to see begin to emerge. Why don't we conclude with this? Can you talk a bit more about what you mean by a positive vision for the CBC? And do you think in this clearly politically charged environment, I mean, if you're getting people complaining to you on just about any platform they can find about the CBC, we've got the minister trying to articulate things, we've got an opposition leader saying he wants to cut the CBC out altogether. You know, is there scope for a positive vision right now, or is it almost a save the furniture type moment when it comes to some of those who are at the CBC right now?
Well, there's two things that give me hope. The first one is that when you do speak to people across the political spectrum about the CBC, even people who have very strong complaints, even people who believe that it should be defunded for sure, those people still have some fondness and nostalgia for what the CBC used to be. You know, I think a lot about, I grew up in BC, and in the summers, I would often be traveling throughout BC. And this is like not fancy travel. This is like on Greyhound buses or, you know, with my friends, that type of thing. And everywhere you went, CBC radio would be on, in the most remote cafes, sometimes on the bus itself. It was just the soundtrack of your days. And I think a lot of people feel that way. And there are many places in our history where the CBC has done an incredible job and where we have incredible archives to draw on. And so even when you talk to people who are very angry at the CBC, there are still a lot of fondness for old Michael Enright shows, for old Barbara Frum shows, for Peter Zofsky, you know, for Hockey Night in Canada. All of that exists, even right up until when the Tragically Hip did that massive concert and it had 11 million viewers. So That sentiment towards the CBC exists. And the question is, even among conservatives, how do you tap into that sentiment to preserve an institution that has played a really important role in all of our lives and that could go on to do so again? And the way to do that, I think, is to talk about what the broadcaster can be. And I think that's where you focus on local news, investigative reporting, accountability reporting that requires institutional weight. That kind of reporting that takes government and corporations to account is difficult to do. It is litigious. It is often intimidating, and you need institutional weight to do that. But then there's also the matter of our unique culture. And CBC Radio, I think, still in many cases does a great job of highlighting the richness and the texture of local communities on morning radio and how wonderful it is to be able to turn on the radio and hear about what's going on in your city, what's going on in your town, but also as we're welcoming so many immigrants to the country, to articulate a kind of vision for what they're joining. What does it mean in terms of politics and culture and art and literature and comedy and all, the whole scope of what it means to be a Canadian in this moment? Here's the other thing that does give me hope as well, Michael, is the moment we're in right now is different than the moment we were in even 10 days ago, in that I think the country is starting to understand in a new way the value of our sovereignty, the value of our shared history and our collective idea of what it means to be Canadian, a national cohesion. And there is a sentiment there of wanting to defend that I haven't seen in a long time. And the natural way to do that would be through institutions in general, but through the CBC in particular. Now, will the CBC meet the moment? That is the big question. Are they going to be able to harness this feeling throughout the populace and change enough to meet the moment to satisfy the concerns of Canadians about the direction the CBC has gone? That I don't know, but I am hopeful.
Okay, well, it's not often you have a conversation about the CBC and end with some amount of hope, but that was a great last answer. It certainly brought back memories for me growing up of things like Peter Czosky that my mom used to listen to regularly, and Hockey Night in Canada and stuff like that. So you're right. It's certainly true. It's embedded, I think, for many in many aspects of our culture. And perhaps if we are willing to be more bold, it might have a future for the next generation as well. Tara, thank you so much for your work in the area and for joining me here on the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me on.
That's the Law Bites podcast for this week. If you have comments, suggestions, or other feedback, write to lawbites@pobox.com. That's LAWBYTES at pobox.com. Follow the podcast on Twitter at LawBitesPod, or follow Michael Geist at MGeist. You can download the latest episodes from my website at michaelgeist.ca or subscribe at iTunes, Google, or Spotify. The Law Bites podcast is produced by Gerardo LeBron LeBoy. Music by the LeBoy brothers, Gerardo and Jose LeBron LeBoy. Credit information for clips featured in this podcast can be found in the show notes at michaelgeist.ca. I'm Michael Geist. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.